Blog Talk Radio.
As First Lady Michelle Obama tours South Africa and Botswana this week, we'll look at the dynamic evolution from South Africa's violent and racially divided past to where they stand today in world affairs. Having successfully hosted the World Cup in 2010, South Africa has proved that they are a world power that has overcome apartheid, racial oppression, and the 27-year jail term of former President Nelson Mandela. We'll interview Dr. Graham Codrington, a native-born white South African whom I met at a conference in Cape Town, South Africa in 2010. And then we'll play the inspirational message that Michelle Obama delivered this week at the Regina Munde Church in Soweto, South Africa, as she addresses young women from across Africa attending the Young African Women Leaders Forum hosted by the U.S. Department of State. Countries can reform. People can reform. It takes courage, sacrifice, and a willing spirit to make a difference. Today, that is South Africa. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for listening to the show. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and we have had a busy news week. There are lots of things going on, certainly here in the Boston area. I want to give a big shout-out to my friends over at Sportsman's Tennis Club. They are putting on a national pro circuit tour as we speak between now and Sunday over at 950 Blue Hill Avenue in Dorchester. They're playing regardless of the weather. They have indoor and outdoor courts. And we would certainly encourage all of our listeners who are in the greater Boston area, if you have an opportunity to go over to Sportsman's Tennis Club anytime between now and Sunday and see fabulous young women playing sports, playing tennis, and playing it with a lot of gusto and enthusiasm. I now understand, because I had a chance to go to the reception this past Monday, and this actually, this Pro Circuit Tour is put on by the United States Tennis Association. This is like the farm team. The people, the women who will win this particular tournament have an opportunity to go on to the U.S. Open Series. And the U.S. Open Series then leads these young women on to the U.S. Open. So you can't get much higher than that. For more information, you can go to sportsmanstennisclub.org or call them at 617-288-9092 for more information and also for the schedule of activities. You can also go to newengland.usta.com for the particulars of this great tournament. We also know that our president, President Barack Obama, has now outlined the tour of activities that will take place between now and 2014 in terms of our troops coming home from Afghanistan. As many as 30,000 troops will come home between now and next year. That will be reducing the numbers to pre-surge level, with the remaining 70,000 who will be out of Afghanistan by 2014. And my prayers and thoughts go up to all of the soldiers who are in Afghanistan. I know one, Michael Wiltz, who just came home 2 weeks ago, praying also for Tiffany Dortch, who just is doing her second tour of duty. So I definitely have connections over in Afghanistan, as I did with Iraq. And my thoughts and prayers go to all of the soldiers and all of the troops in those respective countries. Well, if you're in the Boston area, you've known for decades about Whitey Bulger. Well, they finally caught the guy in Santa Monica, California, yesterday with his girlfriend, thanks to her hair and nail activities. Put a tip out to a nationwide audience, and they have finally been caught. Hooray, Whitey Bulger, right up there with Osama bin Laden. He didn't kill as many people, 19 people to be exact, but what a web of evil and violence he had, and so we are so glad that he is off the streets, even at the age of 81, now going behind bars. Well, speaking of bars and violence and evolution and revolution, we're going to turn our attention now to South Africa. And it doesn't take long to know the dynamics that have gone on in that country through the decades. It's a country that I really see in its infancy for a number of different reasons. There are about 49 million people in the country of South Africa, the last country on the continent of Africa. Age structure, lots of young people, about 28% of young people between the ages of 0 and 14, 65% between the ages of 15 and 64, and about 5% over the age of 65. The median age total median age is 25 years old. It's a young population, male 24, female 25. What really is staggering for me is to look at the median age, which is about 43 years old, I believe, is the median age for South Africa. It's probably one of the most progressive and dynamic and important countries on the whole continent of Africa, with their 53 to 54 different countries. And this week they're hosting a conference. It actually is being put on by the U.S. State Department. They're putting on a Young African Women Leaders Forum, and their guest speaker a few days ago was our very own First Lady, Michelle Obama. I'm going to play her speech in just a few minutes, just excerpts from her speech, and I really encourage the WhiteHouse.gov. The WhiteHouse.gov is our official website for the White House. They don't have this speech on their website. They need to have it on there. They have some other clips from her trip to South Africa and Botswana. But this speech in particular needs to go on their site. I did an exhaustive search last night to find the right clip, and I could have easily gotten on the White House website. So I'm hoping that they're going to upload it in the next couple of days so that you can go there and listen to it. It's a really inspirational speech. I mean, the incredible amount of fortitude and inspiration that goes in there, tying in the civil rights movement along with Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress and just all of the years of struggle that went on with South Africa is amazing. 2 years ago, I had an opportunity to go to South Africa for a speakers conference for the Global Federation of Speakers. I met a lot of speakers in and around the continent, but certainly on the continent of in the country of South Africa. We were in Cape Town and Johannesburg, where Mrs. Obama is right now. It's like night and day. Very different cities, very different demographics. But I want to play a video clip, an interview clip, from Dr. Graham Codrington, who is a fellow speaker and lives currently primarily in England, but he is a native South African. He is not an Afrikaner. But I wanted to play this clip first to give you a sense of the complicated relationships in South Africa. South Africa is a country on the grow. It's a country, as I had mentioned earlier, where they successfully hosted the World Cup, but yet they have staggering numbers in terms of HIV. Their unemployment rate is also significantly large. They obviously have diamond fields and rich minerals, but huge, vast populations of poverty in that country. And also a history of apartheid, that we read about, we know about, that is extremely important in the history of that country and the continent of Africa. Graham Codrington gives the perspective of a white South African that we don't really think about all the time. We think about the Afrikaners, we know what they did, we know about the impression that they bared upon the people of color, the colored people who you'll hear about in just a few minutes, obviously the blacks in South Africa, but there were other populations equally affected by apartheid. And Dr. Codrington, I think, does a great job in explaining that. So stay tuned and listen to these words, and hopefully it'll give you some food for thought when you're thinking about this country, the relationships across the line in terms of ethnicity, where South Africa is growing and where they've come from. This is Dr. Graham Codrington.
I am an African by birth, My grandparents on my mother's side are fourth generation. Well, I'm a fourth generation African by birth, and on my father's side, second generation. But I am also an African by choice. And I think that as a white African, you have to do both of those. You know, where you're born is an accident of geography and out of your control. Where you choose to place your heart, well, that's your choice. And I am African. And so we were a country divided, and we were a country.
It was a caste system, from what I.
In a sense, yes.
From what I'm. Because, you know, our whole mentality from an American perspective was you had blacks, you had coloreds, and you had whites. But you are helping to differentiate between the levels of whites. And the privileges that were given.
And the levels of black and the level of colored, for those who don't know, is the mixed race, which we would prefer, and they would prefer to be called colored. So it's not a derogatory term used in South Africa.
Right.
And, of course, there were Indian. There's an important Malay Indian population as well, and a reasonably significant Chinese population. And interestingly, Chinese people have white skins, but were not considered white under apartheid.
Right.
It was crazy. I mean, we know it was crazy. Yeah. It was nuts. Mm. But as a white South African, I was a child of privilege. Mm-hmm. And yet, as I grew up, realized that I had not understood the country that I was part of. Mm-hmm. And so I, although it was the country of my birth, I couldn't really say it was the country of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And coming as an adult, having opportunities, a number of experiences that opened my eyes to other people, something I didn't say in my speech yesterday. As a white person growing up in a nice house that was well looked after, you know, I just thought that all black people live in squatter camps and the bush. You know, that. I suppose the dream in America was the dream that the color of your skin should make no difference to where you're born or where you choose to place your heart. And I claim that dream as in the opposite way almost, as a white African, I claim that. So that's my starting point. But it isn't a point that I started at in life. Being born in 1970 in South Africa as a white child, I was a child of privilege without knowing it. I came from a reasonably poor home. My father was a school teacher and after that a church pastor, neither of which are really well-paid professions anywhere in the world. But even growing up in what I would have considered a poor home, I was nevertheless in a white home in apartheid South Africa. And that was a home that opened me to a lot of privileges, to free education and health care and a really nice house in the suburbs. And the minority, you know, there are only 9% of the country are white English speaking. Again, maybe that's helpful for people to understand outside of South Africa. Apartheid wasn't white versus black because there are different types of whites and there are different types of black, different tribes and different clans. In fact, we have 11 official languages in South Africa at the moment representing that diversity. And so as an English-speaking white person, it was an interesting
Let me just ask you,
yeah.
You said that apartheid was not white versus black. What was apartheid?
Apartheid was a white-dominated government that used that was mainly controlled by Afrikaans-speaking white people who excluded and included people in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to get, for instance, one of the big divides in politics at the moment, which is about to be mended in some way, was the divide between the Xhosa tribe, which Nelson Mandela and Thabo Mbeki come from, and the Zulu tribe, which probably our next president, Jacob Zuma, comes from. And that is, with all the other things being said about Jacob Zuma, it is very interesting that he is a Zulu, because the divide between Xhosa and Zulu is huge.
Really?
Because the many Zulus, an entire political party of the Zulus, actually worked for the apartheid government as informers and were given special privileges. White English-speaking South Africans as myself, we had privileges because we were white, but we were excluded from many things because we were not Afrikaans.
Thank you for clarifying that. That's really helpful.
You know,
really
these are things I've only learned as an adult. I remember just as a simple example. I was in a school marching band. My school was an English-speaking school, And we were the only English-speaking school to have a marching band. All the Afrikaans-speaking schools around us also had marching bands. And even though when I was in my final year of school, our band was by far the best, of course I would say that, but, you know, I think even objectively we were. But because the marching bands came under the military structure, they were part, the judges were from the military, and the military was dominated by the Afrikaans-speaking people, we came third. You know, now that's a little story, a tiny little thing, it doesn't change anybody's life.
Yeah.
But I remember as a high school student just feeling the injustice. Mm-hmm. Now that's nowhere near the injustice of someone who spent 27 mm-hmm. years in jail, but mm-hmm. that is the problem in South Africa, is you have these tiny stories of injustice that all add up mm-hmm. to the big injustice of apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
And gives you a sense of what's going on in terms of this particular set of circumstances. I would encourage all of you to go to YouTube, and you can just put www.youtube.com into your browser and do a search for Carol Copeland Thomas, my name, and then you will see a two-part interview with Dr. Codrington, which I think is quite fascinating. It gives you a lot of very good information about the different stratospheres, the different levels of ethnicities. Again, from an American point of view, we looked at all whites as Afrikaners, and Dr. Codrington said no. I mean, I think his background is of English descent, and the Afrikaners are of Dutch descent from the Netherlands. So two different countries, two different ethnicities from that perspective, and treatment also being very different. I would also, let me also share with you what happened from my point of view in 2003, 2009, when I made a trip, had my third trip to Africa. My first two trips had been to Kenya, and then the third trip was to South Africa. Got there literally days before their election for the president. Very hotly contested election, and Jacob Zuma actually did win the election. Jacob Zuma is very politically charged. He is of Zulu. His ethnicity is Zulu. He did spend time in Robben's Island along with Nelson Mandela, even though they are from two different tribes. But has a very fascinating background, got into trouble with a young woman, and he was absolved of that trouble, was charged with rape, and was actually absolved from it. It was a very, very volatile case, which could have ended his political career. But anyway, he is now currently the president and doing, I think, a very strong job as a leader of that country. When we look at the ethnic groups with South Africa, 79% of the South Africans are black, 9.6% are white, colored 8.9%, and again, in that country, they are referred to as colored. In this country, in the United States, the word colored is passé, not used, and looked down on. We use the term people of color, but in South Africa, colored is still used for mixed-raced individuals. Indian or Asians, 2.5%, and that's according to the 2001 Census Bureau. There are lots of religions in South Africa. Christianity, Zion Christian, 11%. There are other brands of Christianity, and then the indigenous religions are also very much alive and well. And there are several languages spoken, too, in addition to English. IsiZulu is an official language, about 23% speaks that. Afrikaners represent 13.3% English. The official language of English is spoken. And so you have several different languages that are all the official languages of South Africa. You have different tribes from different ethnic groups. Again, you mix all that together, and you have one dynamically diverse, multicultural, interesting, fascinating country. It is absolutely interesting. And not so different than some of the other countries in Africa. There are about 54 countries now in Africa. South Sudan will be one of the newest ones. And just quite interesting about what can take place. We have a caller now from 207. We're going to entertain this call before we go on to play the excerpt from Michelle Obama. Hello, welcome to Focus on Empowerment.
Hello there, and thank you for welcoming me to Focus on Empowerment. This is Dr. Cheryl from Waterville, Maine. Cheryl Townsend Jokes calling you from Colby College. How are you?
How are you? I'm doing well.
I'm fine.
Thank you so much for calling my show, and you have a wonderful gospel show that airs every Wednesday from 8 until 10.
Thank you so much for the shout-out. I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you.
And I also had to call because I listened to the excerpt by Mr. Codrington.
Yes.
And as you are aware, I've been teaching courses on race and ethnicity since 1973. And South Africa has been a very solid component of that. And I also visited South Africa on the eve of the right before the elections that led to the end of apartheid.
My goodness.
And I just wanted to add a little something to the discussion because there were some things that Brother Codrington left out in describing the distinction between the Afrikaans and the English.
Yes, share that with us.
One of the things, the Afrikaners did control the political system. They were the majority of the white population, and they were the nationalist party that created apartheid after the election of 1948. But what he did not tell you, and probably because of his own experience of not being wealthy and well-to-do, is that it is the English-speaking people who controlled the economy.
Mm.
Okay? And that is an important component. And it was
English people
who looked down on the Afrikaans-speaking people and said that they basically spoke kitchen Dutch, sort of the way in which English-speaking people in Canada look down on French Canadians and talk about their French as not being real French.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's a great distinction and great information to share with us. Again, you can skip across the continent of Africa and you can see the hand of the English everywhere.
Yeah, because the fact that the sun never set on the British Empire was a very, very real thing. And we look at headlines today and we look at where in the world there is huge, that spiritual that says there's trouble all over this world. But if you look at some of the real hot spots, they are former British colonies that were run by what we call indirect rule. That is, they utilized indigenous groups of people to help them run things. And using those indigenous groups of people made cleavages in those societies so that when the British left, when independence comes, the press calls it tribalism, but it's really a legacy of cleavage, of exploitation, of cooperation with the colonial master in order to run things. And it's the economics that are,
that's right.
It's the, as Bill Clinton would say, it's the economy, stupid.
That's right. The economic engine is definitely there. Doctor, thank you so much for sharing that with us and adding that point. Please hang on and listen to the interview we're going to do with Michelle Obama, the excerpts, where she's going to lift us up as we go out of the show. Yes, but thank you so much for calling it, and definitely stay tuned again.
Thank you so much. Know what? I'm going to hang up and go back to listening to that because your listenership is going to have a wonderful time hearing excerpts from that great, wonderful speech of hers.
Super. Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. Take
care. Thanks for a great show. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's listen now to Michelle Obama and what she had to say to the young girls who were gathering in Soweto, South Africa, which is now a part of Johannesburg, during the conference this week.
I am here today because when it comes to the challenges we face, we simply don't have time to sit back and wait. I'm here because I believe that each of you is ready, right here and right now, to start meeting these challenges. And I am here because I know that true leadership that lifts families, leadership that sustains communities and transforms nations, that kind of leadership rarely starts in palaces or parliaments. That kind of leadership is not limited only to those of a certain age or status. And that kind of leadership is not just about dramatic events that change the course of history in an instant. Instead, true leadership often happens with the smallest acts, in the most unexpected places, by the most unlikely individuals. So make no mistake about it, there are still so many causes worth sacrificing for. There is still so much history yet to be made. You can be the generation that makes the discoveries and builds the industries that will transform our economy. You can be the generation that brings opportunity and prosperity to forgotten corners of the world and banishes hunger from this continent forever. You can be the generation that ends HIV/AIDS in our time. The generation that fights not just the disease, but the stigma of the disease. The generation that teaches the world that HIV is fully preventable and treatable and should never be a source of shame. You can be the generation that holds your leaders accountable for open, honest government at every level. Government that stamps out corruption and protects the rights of every citizen to speak freely, to worship openly, to love whomever they choose. You can be the generation to ensure that women are no longer second-class citizens, that girls take their rightful places in our schools. You can be the generation that stands up and says that violence against women in any form, in any place, including the home, especially the home, that isn't just a women's rights violation, it's a human rights violation, and it has no place in any society. You see, that is the history that your generation can make. I hope that all of you will reject the false comfort that others' suffering is not your concern. Or if you can't solve all the world's problems, then you shouldn't even try. Instead, as one of our great American presidents, Teddy Roosevelt, liked to say, I hope that you will commit yourselves to doing what you can with what you got where you are. Because in the end, that is what makes you a lion.
And that is a bits and pieces of the speech that Michelle Obama delivered earlier this week in Soweto, South Africa, which is now a part of Johannesburg. Johannesburg is northern. It's in the northern part of South Africa. Cape Town, where I was, is literally on the Cape, the farthest point. It's actually where the Atlantic Ocean and the Indian Ocean meet, and Robben's Island is off of the Cape Town area, and we're going to probably do a show in the not-so-distant future about Robben's Island. I actually visited there. I saw Nelson Mandela's cell. It is a sobering trip. But this is just a great speech, and I hope that, the actual video that you can see will be on the White House website. I hope that it's going to be up there soon. One thing that that was not talked about in this clip, the very last sentence, she was talking about building your future, and she said, if anyone has any doubts about building your future, you can what you couldn't do and what you can't do. I want to say with one voice, the voice of a generation, you tell them, yes, we can. What do you say? Yes, we can. What do you say? Yes, we can. She is a powerful spokesperson for freedom and possibilities. Hope you've enjoyed this show. We'll be back with more exciting things next week. Make it a great week or weekend wherever you happen to be. And remember that empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. Thank you so much who are staying tuned in to focus on empowerment.